You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Hour number two on a Thursday, Cleveland Browns Daily with Jason Gibbs, Matt Wilhelm, Zagura out. He'll be back on Monday. I didn't realize the office here is closed tomorrow.
I didn't either.
Everybody gets days off.
Not the glue.
not the glue. The glue is here.
Yes.
Going nowhere. Keeping the show together.
Not yet.
Thank God.
Not yet.
Soon enough, my friend.
Yes.
Soon enough. Now, do you need to go? Do you go tanning beforehand?
God, no.
I'm just saying.
No.
It's a question.
Some people do.
I've had to go. I am not exactly.
Tanning's horrible for you.
I am a fair-skinned individual.
I
need a little bit of a
base. I love having a tan, but so I'm not going to go in a tanning bed.
I barely fit, and it's kind of awkward. I've never felt
stand
comfortable.
Stand up or lay down?
Lay down.
Okay.
I have never felt comfortable in the tanning bed, ever. But, I mean, and I'm not saying I go weekly or anything, but if I'm going somewhere that I know.
Wilhelm, the visuals is just unbelievable.
Yes.
Greasy. Here's the thing. Like,
I don't want to even ask the question.
I was
going to
say.
You don't want follow up here? You got it. For me, I burn right away, and then I go tan. Now, I'll keep the tan for like 3 or 4 months. That's not an issue, but it eliminates or slows down the burn.
When I get exposed to sun, I tan very, very well. But what I've learned over the course of, you know, many vacations is I'm gonna be out in the sun a lot.
You are.
Okay. If you're constant with the SPF 30, we'll say, you're still gonna get a tan. That's the one misconception is people think I don't want to wear it because I want to be tan. It's like, no, I wanna wear it because I don't want to get, you know, skin cancer. I don't want to get burnt. I don't wanna, you know, ruin my vacation because of it. So I'm gonna be applying, and I'll naturally just get sun, especially now that it's gonna be 5 days. You know, so you're going to be out and about doing, you know, out on the beach for hours on end. But no, I don't need a base. I'm just going
to
go in.
You don't need to go like once or twice.
No. Okay. No. I haven't been in a long time, and I promise you it is very awkward for me as well because
yeah.
I have, for whatever reason, I still have a habit. I always look around and think there's a hidden camera somewhere, you know, ceiling, like at Walmart, I'm always like, okay, someone's always watching. And I find it very weird that you can go in there and yet no one's watching.
I like double and triple check the lock.
Yes,
like,
of course.
Totally compulsive, obsessive compulsive going, all right, is this thing? All right, good. No one's going to come in because this is weird.
Yes.
Weird, not weird, but you got to build a little bit of a base. All right, time for fact or fiction. Our host for the day, Dave DiNatale.
Fact. Or fiction.
I would love to ask you fact or fiction questions about your sun tanning, but I think we're just going to move on and
we don't
want to
get
forward.
Into personal things now, do we, Dino?
No, we don't. We don't do those kinds of things,
yeah,
Gibbs.
That's right.
All right. Leading off on fact or fiction, I would like to know, after quarterback, the biggest need for the Browns is a pass rusher, either an edge rusher at the linebacker spot or defensive end.
I'm going to say fact. And the reason why this comes on the cusp of a outside linebacker slash pass rusher getting the NFL or a Super Bowl MVP. And I just believe if you look at the role that J.J. Watt and how productive and destructive he is as a pass rusher, playing in the other team's backfield, forcing you as an offense to game plan, especially for one player and then the remainder of a defense. And I think to get that guy to me, as important as having your quarterback. If you have your quarterback on one end, I would take an outside linebacker or a pass rusher, a guy that can give me 10 sacks a year, over even having a shutdown corner.
I'm going to say fiction because I need a wide receiver. I need a playmaker.
You have one.
I don't know that I have one yet.
You will have one.
I don't. Yeah. For how long?
True.
I need a playmaker. I need a guy that's going to get me in the end zone, that's going to get me points, that might only touch the ball 12 times a game, but if he touches the ball 12 times and gets into the end zone twice, that's more than what that position has done for me in the past.
I gotta say, I agree with the, I agree with the question. I think the Browns have to be able to, on a defensive side, they've got to get pressure on the quarterback. I think we've seen it now the last couple of Super Bowls. Not so much last year with Brady and Russell Wilson, but you know, this year with Denver and Carolina and previously with Seattle, if you're able to disrupt the opponent's passing game, it's huge. So yes, get me a pass rusher after a quarterback.
Wide receiver, darn it.
Listen, let me tell you something. Treadwell, if the Browns were to bypass a quarterback at two and get Treadwell, I wouldn't be upset, honestly.
I'm right there with you.
Fact or fiction?
But we're talking quarterbacks here on Fact or Fiction, and the Browns should draft not one, but two quarterbacks in this year's draft.
I'm going to say fact. I really do. If the minds that sitting at that table, as I constantly call it, spit out a collective report that we go quarterback at number two and there's a definitive guy, whether it's Carson Wentz, Paxton Lynch, or Jared Goff, you take that guy at number two, you throw him in the fire immediately, you take the bumps and bruises as every franchise has done with that guy, because I don't necessarily think we have a franchise quarterback from him to learn from. You have a built-in quarterback/quarterback coach in Josh McCown. And then I think with the accumulation of compensatory picks, fifth, sixth, seventh rounders, or there's a guy that you like in that fourth round, kind of like the Green Bay Packers did last year with the kid out of UCLA. What was his name?
Oh, I know.
The light-skinned fella.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yep.
I know.
Okay.
Yeah.
But anyway, you take him as a luxury. I don't want to hate to say a luxury pick, because every pick for us has got to mean something. And I think you do take two, because if for whatever reason that number two overall pick struggles a little bit, you've got a developmental guy.
Brett Hundley.
You've got a developmental guy, you know, that can make your practice squad, you know, kind of grow right along with that number two pick and with over the mentorship of Josh McCown.
I would say fact. You need as many quarterbacks as you can until you
swing
find the one that's going to take you where you need to go. If you need to draft three, or you need draft two and sign one or two in free agency, if you bring six QBs to camp, I don't care. Find me one that can play and can be successful.
Yeah, I'll take two quarterbacks. I think you, if you get the guy that you think is the heir apparent, but you also get a developmental guy, I think that hedge your bets as much as you want. Look what, and again, people will point this out, but look what Washington did, you know, drafting both Robert Griffin III and Kirk Cousins. You know,
Cousins was what, a fourth?
Yeah.
Yep.
So you end up having a potential starter plus a potential, not just having insurance for you, but a potential trade asset in the future.
Agreed. I love it.
I'll take it.
Fact or fiction?
Of all the Browns' pending free agents, Mitchell Schwartz should be the number one priority to re-sign.
I'm going to say fact. I really do believe that Mitchell probably had his best year in a contract year last year, even for a team that struggled to run the football, that struggled collectively as a football team going 3-13. I believe with Joe Thomas on the left side and potentially Mitchell Schwartz on your right side, that you've, between Joel Bitonio, maybe Alex Mack, Cam Irving, Alex Pastor, and maybe, you know, adding some young talent in the draft, not too high, that you've still got a strong offensive line. Especially Mitchell Schwartz excelled, you know, in run blocking and struggled, you know, kind of slightly in pass blocking here and there. But playing in this scheme is only going to help Mitchell Schwartz, and having a guy and having that continuity is a very good thing.
I'm torn because I want to say fact, because I'm concerned that you might lose Alex Mack, and we don't know what Cam Irving. You hope Cam Irving's in the weight room right now, and he's in the weight room every day, getting a little bit stronger. I'm gonna go fiction though. I think you need Tashaun Gibson back. I think you need to do whatever you can to get Tashaun Gibson back. I think that you have an aging Dontae Whitner.
Yeah.
You're not sure what Joe Hayden's status. Yeah, he's cleared, but here's a guy that his first major injury. How's he going to overcome that? And you have nothing on the other side, DB. I mean, Tremont Williams you've got, but Tremont's
Justin
getting up
Gilbert.
There. Justin Gilbert's taking a nap. he's a heavy sleeper. I feel like Gibson's the one guy that can bring something to your team that I don't think you're going to need to break the bank to bring him back on.
I think, you know, I like Gibson, and I think in Ray Horton's defense, he flourished, I think, as much as we've seen. Also look at 2014 as well. But, JC, I think the Browns, not knowing what's going to be happening with Alex Mack and will he opt out, will he not opt out, and with Joe Thomas continuing to age, I think you've got to protect that offensive line. So, especially if you're going to get a rookie quarterback this year. So they've got to make sure Mitchell Schwartz is locked up.
Fact or fiction?
Josh McCown will be the Browns' starting quarterback for the 2016 regular season opener.
I don't know. I'm going to say it is a fact that Josh McCown will be the starting quarterback in game one of the 2016 Cleveland Browns season. And the only reason is because Hugh will have an enormous amount of respect, and I think Josh will be able to grasp this offense and collectively show it on the practice field and throughout training camp much better than any rookie will. And for that reason, he'll initially start. But I also think there will be an asterisk next to his name or a conversation had in meetings that this is just oh so very temporary until you get the Goff, the Wentz, the Lynch, the reps that he needs. Because if this organization is really as far away as many people think they are, whatever quarterback's going to be our franchise quarterback, if we do take a quarterback at two, needs as much experience as possible and to take those lumps, to throw those bad interceptions, to have those overthrows, to get knocked down and get back up so that he can quickly grasp what it takes to play quarterback in the NFL.
I'm going to say fiction because I think if you draft the guy, he needs to start day one. Let's go. Let's see what you got. Because whether it's now, whether it's eight games in, there's going to be a learning curve with the
sure.
new quarterback.
Sure.
Throw him in. Right now, you can go nowhere but up. You have the number two pick in the draft, which means you finished 31st this year.
See, what's hard for me, and again, I went safe to say yes, you know, but it's very easy for me to go on the flip side. And I guess my argument for the reason to say you, Josh McCown, if Hugh Jackson and Paul D. Podesta and Sashi Brown feel they've made the headway to get more competitive than they've been, right? You want to come out of the gates and win some football games and start that momentum as quick as you can. We know there's going to be teams that are just going to flat out be better than us and beat us. You know you're going to lose some tough games, but you might win a couple tough games or games that you're not supposed to win. And I want to say Josh McCown because he probably gives you the best chance to go out and win early. But his track record, as Riz consistently points out on The Really Big Show, is what? 2-16, 2-18 as a starter
exactly.
over the last 2018 starts. So he can be productive and put us in winning situations, but he by himself can't win you football games. So to your point, you might as well have the young kid getting the experience, making those throws, losing the tough ones, winning the surprising games, and keeping you in games, learning along the way.
That's all I've got to say. All right, we got to get a timeout. When we come back, we'll update you on some NFL news happening around the league over the last hour and change, and we'll get you ready for 2:30. Austin Ward from ESPN.com will join us to talk about 14 guys going to the combine from the Ohio State University. All that and more when Cleveland Browns Daily continues on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Austin Ward from ESPN.com, the Big Ten reporter from ESPN, will join us in about 7 minutes from right now. Jason Gibbs, Matt Wilhelm in for Nathan Zagura today. Just a couple news and notes going around the league. I wanted to run by you. Justin Tuck will sign a one-day contract with the Giants before
nice.
Retiring.
It's good.
66 sacks. Any chance he gets into the Hall of Fame at some point?
Come on. No.
9-year career?
Absolutely not.
No?
No.
Why?
No. He was a good player on some good teams in New York.
Not talking first ballot, but at some point does he get in? No.
Nope. Nope.
All right.
Nope.
Interesting.
No.
You and I were talking about earlier, the Seattle Times, bringing up an interesting comparison between Marshawn Lynch and Earl Campbell. Rushes. Lynch with 2,144. Campbell with 2,187. Rushing yards. Campbell with 9,407. Lynch with just over 9,100. Yards per rush, both with 4.3. Rushing touchdown, 74. Campbell in the Hall of Fame.
Yes.
Does that help Marshawn Lynch's case?
Slightly, because, you know, in today's world, and I constantly say it, you know, you compare apples to apples. This is what the guy did. This is what I did. Why am I not in? And that's, I think, in some cases why Zagura has been so adamant and many people have been so adamant about Terrell Owens. You look what he's done, you know, on the football field between those white lines, and it's second best ever. And he's not in first ballot. And you look at other guys and Marvin Harrison and what he's done, and he gets in first ballot. So to me, you absolutely do. But I believe, and only because I was, you know, running back at some point, big physical guy, I think you look at the way Earl Campbell played, and he was, I think you look at the Jim Brown and the way he played, you look at, and in a different era, Earl Campbell played that same way at the running back position. And in some case, you could say Marshawn Lynch with that whole beast mode mentality and his ability to break tackles and not deviate from a hit and not running out of bounds played that way too. I just believe that the running back position has changed so much. You look at what Emmett did, what Barry did. You look at Adrian Peterson and what he's doing now. Adrian Peterson is a physical runner and doesn't run people over and runs out of bounds and runs away from people. And I think that's, in some cases, why people look down on Marshawn.
You and I were talking about it, too. Marshawn, his Buffalo career was okay.
Yeah.
It wasn't great.
His early Seattle was just okay.
Yeah. I mean, the last three, you said last four, I mean, the last couple seasons were his most productive.
Yeah, and usually when we have these conversations, Nathan's, you know, pumping out validation, you know, off a Pro Football Focus or, you know, or something with yards and statistics over these years that we're talking about. And I really do think the reason why it's a hot button topic is A, Hall of Fame voting just happened and a new class, you know, will enter Canton, and B, Seattle's in there, still in their window. Their window's still open. And so, and Marshawn just announcing his retirement, it's a hot button conversation. It'd be interesting to see how these conversations go for the next 2 or 3 years if he is, in fact, retired, and how people feel about
him. Which is funny because he hasn't formally put
right
in anything.
Sure.
Yet, so.
And I never really did either. You just kind of fade away, and eventually they just take for granted that you're retired, and they start sending you former NFLPA information instead of current NFLPA information.
Vontaze Burfict, one side note, suspension upheld. Good for the NFL for doing that.
Rightfully so.
Yeah. Out for the first three games. You and I were talking. It'll be interesting to see what happens with Tlaib here once the NFL gets back from San Francisco.
Yep.
And if they penalize him, especially because he fully admitted the way he took down –
was intentional.
Philly Brown was essentially, you know, he was trying to knock him out of the football game.
Because he was getting burnt.
Yeah, exactly. I hate Tlaib. Piece of garbage. All right, we got to get a break in. When we come back, Austin Ward from ESPN.com will join us. He'll talk about the Ohio State players going to the combine, the players coming out, where he thinks maybe Cardale Jones will fit in to someone's roster, all that and more. We'll talk Connor Cook. We'll talk signing day, everything with Austin Ward, Big Ten wise. Coming up when Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR rolls on.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
All right, back here on Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR. Gibbs and Wilhelm in for the vacationing Nathan Zagura today. If you're out and about driving, please be careful. Give yourself a little extra time. Roads are not great. Snowing again.
Snowing still.
Yeah, and I can deal with it. I'm not upset because this is the first snow we've had. And it's the middle of February. We're a month away from being out of the neck of the being out of this stuff.
Hope so.
I mean,
Punxsutawney didn't see a shadow.
Yeah, but you occasionally get those rare snowstorms in March, even into April. I remember an Easter weekend.
You just golf in between them, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's hey, by the way, you've been invited to join the Hooligans Golf League.
Yeah. Wow. It's in my neck of the woods, too.
Chairman
right?
Christian Trimble. Legacy? Sending the invite. I think that's where we're going to be.
Once a week?
Yeah. It's usually on Wednesdays.
Okay.
Like at 5:30.
All right.
9 holes and a bunch of booze. All good. All right, to the hotline. To the hotline we go on this Thursday, and we welcome in Austin Ward from ESPN.com. He's their Big Ten reporter, covers everything football-wise, basketball-wise, a number of different sports. He is always running around like a chicken with his head cut off, and he's got a few minutes to join us here today, which we greatly appreciate. Austin, how are you, sir?
I could use some of that 9 holes and booze that you guys were talking about.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking
about. Can't we all?
When is your downtime?
Well, I'm sneaking in a little bit right now because, there's not been too much great Big Ten basketball to cover down around Columbus so far this year. So maybe sneak a little in post-signing day before the NCAA tournament gears up, the conference tournaments next month. And, of course, we still have the draft and all. It's just, it's just a crazy time of year anyway. But, maybe get a couple weeks to sneak off the grid for a little bit soon.
So Ohio State loses 16 starters from last year. 13 of those invited to the combine, plus backup Cardale Jones. Is this the deepest representation of a team that you've seen going to the combine in your time of covering this? I mean, this is crazy. It's like if you were an impact player at Ohio State, you're at the combine.
Yeah, I mean, the word you used is what I've been saying all along, looking ahead to this pro day that Ohio State's going to have on March 11th next month. It's going to be an absolute madhouse. It's an insane collection of talent. You think back to those early 2000 Miami teams that were sending piles of players to the combine and getting drafted. Of course, maybe the combine wasn't quite as big at that point as it's the event it's become now, but that sort of team, the USC teams in the middle of last decade, where you just every single player that started on that team you could expect to see being talked about on draft boards and going on to the next level. And it's remarkable to think that they were all on this same team. Even the way their careers played out, they went 12-1 and everybody wrote them off as a huge disappointment. It's still very difficult to do that in college football, but it speaks to how extremely talented so many of those guys were that one loss felt like the end of the world for them. And what's crazy to me, more than just the volume of players that we're going to talk about through 7 rounds, is that there could be 6 or 7 of them in the first round,
yep,
which is just absolutely remarkable.
It really is. And Austin, along those same lines, I think people are going to be blown away by how big and fast and how great these guys all test at the combine and perform on their pro days. That will probably project a lot of them up the boards, as we all might presume. But the one question I have for you, as you cover them all year long, with as many big, fast, talented athletes that, seven guys that might go first round, what do you think some of the struggles that came for Ohio State, throughout the early and middle portions of the season before they kind of hit their groove at the end of the season with that stumble again in Michigan State? What led to those struggles? Was it the management of the talent that they couldn't kind of get under grasp at that point?
When you look at it in hindsight, and this was always going to be the dominant storyline for them with the quarterbacks, with Cardale Jones and JT Barrett. I thought that they would be able to handle playing both. They talked so much about how they were good friends that they didn't care about how, who was going to start and who was going to back up. But I think if there's been one thing that Urban Meyer has not done well at Ohio State, it was last year in dealing with the quarterback situation. When they were going back and forth in September, I think they needed to pick one guy and let it go and build an identity around that. I talked to some coordinators around the Big Ten in the middle of the season and after, just kind of to look at what happened. And they felt early in the year, September and early October, that Ohio State was using basically two different offenses because JT Barrett and Cardale Jones do not have the exact same skill set. You guys are very well aware of that. One is a much better dual threat. The one has a huge arm and is a pro prospect, Barrett being the rusher and Jones a much better passer, at least with the deep ball. But that they weren't able to really rep an entire offense, and Ohio State was somewhat predictable. They were getting they were having some problems beating teams that they were much, much more talented than. I think once they settled on JT Barrett, and certainly at the end of the year, I mean, he was dealing with, you know, just struggles of confidence, because they did wind up in that situation where they were looking over their shoulders. And then you compound that with the fact that I don't think Tim Beck was ideally suited to be calling the plays from the press box. You saw after they lost to Michigan State, they made one move. They send Ed Warner up there to call plays, and all of a sudden they're dismantling Michigan and taking apart Notre Dame in the Fiesta Bowl. I think Urban Meyer was a little bit slow to make a decision that seemed pretty obvious to many people and did work instantly. And the other thing was just the quarterback situation became far too much for them to handle. And then it was too late by the time they found that stability and finally started showing just how talented they truly were.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And Austin, one of our Ohio Business Machine hot topics today is, next to Joey Bosa, who will probably be picked, you know, top five in this year's draft, of those potentially seven first-round picks and the 13 that, or 16 that might get drafted in this year's upcoming draft, who do you think year one is going to have the best year potentially beyond Bosa in the NFL?
Wow, that's a great question, because I got the wheels spinning trying to think of how the best way to answer that. The guy that I think has the most potential outside of Bosa and could maybe translate right away is Darren Lee. I think you look at what he brings at that outside linebacker, potentially, if however somebody wants to use him. I was going to say he could stand up and rush the passer off the edge. You can drop him down, you know, any number of ways. Ohio State used him to defend the pass. They sent him off the edge as a blitzer. He is such a versatile athlete, and he's really kind of like, to me, and this may sound a little bit hyperbole, too much hyperbole, but he was like the next evolution of Ryan Shazier, and Shazier did not have really any problem translating to the next level right away because he is so fast, strong, but not overly, you know, he doesn't weigh too much, so he can move, still gives a hit, can cover guys in space. I think Lee was the next progression in that. And Shazier, when he's been healthy, has been one of the most impactful linebackers in that division, if not, you know, the NFL, as you guys are well aware of seeing what he's done when healthy. So I think you can, because Lee just has such a diverse set of skills, somebody's going to be really happy to get him, and I think they're going to find someone who can contribute as soon as they get him on the field.
Talking with Austin Ward from ESPN.com, their Big Ten reporter. You can follow him at @AwardESPN on Twitter. Austin, what's one player that from Ohio State that when he announced he was going pro, you raised your eyebrows with?
Well, the one that was truly a surprise for me was the safety, Tyvis Powell. I understand his reasons, his motivation for doing it. He'd been in school for 4 years after redshirting. He had some piles of awards. He'd been factors in winning a national championship, and I get his justification, but still, he's one of the few guys who wasn't really showing up anywhere as much of a draft pick, and maybe that'll wind up working in his favor as he gets a little chip on his shoulder, because not many of these guys are going to have that as they go through their combines. They'll have something to prove. I kind of get why Powell did it. I think Ohio State certainly was expecting that they might have one of those guys in the secondary stick around to help with the transition next year, because now you're looking at a unit there with Von Bell, Tyvis Powell, and Eli Apple all declaring for the draft, leaving them just one starter there in the secondary. And really, that position as a whole had two of the surprises. Bell, I thought for sure all along was going to go, but he seemed to really wrestle with that decision at the end. He was the last junior to declare, and his parents, I know, wanted him to finish up his schooling. But Eli Apple, I just wasn't sure that he was somebody ready to make that jump. But based on what everybody else is seeing, the real talent evaluators, the guys who get paid more money than me for that, they see him as a late first-round pick, and if that's the case, you got to make that jump. And I think really all of them, you can see why they did it, and it makes a lot of sense. And it wasn't a situation where people were fleeing and not happy with the direction of the program.
I agree to a certain extent, and we all know if you've followed Ohio State, we finished with another top three class, one in some, two in others, three in others. Name for me, for any Buckeye fan out there listening, one name that they should be very aware of in this most recent recruiting class for Ohio State, besides Nick Bosa, that you think will have the best first year impact at Ohio State.
Well, I can't take Bosa.
He's the easy one. I took him away. The no brainer.
He is. Yeah. And I just quickly on, I was talking to Urban Meyer and Luke Fickell early last week, and they could not be higher on Nick Bosa, even though he's still not fully healthy from that ACL. They still fully expect him to contribute in the fall, which, you know, kind of blows your mind with how much skill and talent he has. But the one, just focusing on that secondary, it feels like that's the primary concern moving forward. And looking at what left last year, Jordan Fuller, the brother of a pretty dynamic wide receiver at Notre Dame for the last couple of years, he's somebody that I think Ohio State could potentially plug in and play. Again, that's a position at cornerback where Ohio State doesn't have all that much experience returning. I think I would have to check to be sure, but it seems like every single year, if you look at the collection that Urban Meyer picks up there at safety and cornerback, they're always the best or in the top two or three at recruiting in the secondary. So there is a lot of talent that is returning. It just has not played that much yet for Ohio State. But Fuller, you know, you had a chance to talk to Kerry Combs about him as well, just absolutely raving about his ability. You know, a long, rangy corner from New Jersey, as he called him, which sounds a lot like somebody who just left in Eli Apple. So he's somebody that you got to pencil in, potentially contributing right away at a spot that is going to be pretty important. Not only are they losing those three players, but they also had to replace Chris Ash, the safeties and co-defensive coordinator coach. But, of course, you know, they did pretty well in landing a home run higher there, just the same way that they did on the recruiting trail. So Shiano and Fuller, those are two names that you should be looking forward to as you head to August.
Most definitely. And last question for me, Austin, and we appreciate your time. Just that team up north, Jim Harbaugh had a record recruiting class as well, top five, top ten in some.
And only two Wolverines go into the combine.
That's right. Two Wolverines go into the combine, so a lot of experience left. A great recruiting class. As you're in tune to the Big Ten, what's one name, as I asked you for one name from Ohio State, what's one name in Michigan's class this year that 2 years from now Buckeye fans are going to be very, very well aware of in that Jim Harbaugh system?
Yeah, what the thing that Michigan did best with Jim Harbaugh's first full class, they targeted the number one player in the country and they got him. I think I talked to people about Rashawn Gary heading into signing day. They were convinced that he was going to go elsewhere, be it Clemson or all of the big programs in the country were after this guy, and he's going to be, I think, a force on that defensive line. And that's an interesting kind of position, too, when you look at what Michigan did last year. Early in the year, they were pushing people around. The defense was leading the way. But towards the end, they got hit by a couple injuries, and then by the last week of the season, Ohio State runs all over them, and the line kind of fell apart. You get a linchpin like that, and if he lives up to what everybody believes he can become, he's going to be an impact player probably right away. He'd be at the end of his freshman season when you get the game in November. So that could be year one where you're looking at him. And I don't, at this point, it's hard-pressed to see him playing more than three of those rivalry games. But that's going to be somebody that has definitely had Ohio State's attention. They tried to get back in the mix for him late. You know, Shiano knew him a little bit from before and recruiting ties there. But Harbaugh, he made a big push. He was splashy.
Did he sleep on his couch?
He did not sleep over.
Okay,
And that's another thing that we'll have to get into another time. There are some tactics going on that not all the coaches in the Big Ten are a fan of. And it's not just the SEC that seems annoyed with what Jim Harbaugh is doing. I'll say that.
Austin, appreciate all your time today. Great stuff as always. You can read him on ESPN.com. You can follow him at @AwardESPN. Thank you, my friend. All the best, and get some downtime here before things get crazy yet again.
Will do. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
That's Austin Ward from ESPN.com. Timeout for us. When we come back, one final segment to wrap things up on a Thursday. It's Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Want to thank Austin Ward for joining us today. Want to thank everybody who called and tweeted in. One more day in the work week,
Austin still didn't give me a name outside Nick Bosa. He just edified how good Nick Bosa really is.
Didn't he give you Fuller?
Yeah, you're right. He did give me Fuller.
He gave you Fuller.
He gave me Fuller. You're right.
It took him a while.
It did take him a while. I think I caught him off guard. And that's – I wanted to hit – who are these names that, both –
Yeah. How did we get to the number three or number four recruiting class in the country? Because it wasn't just Nick Bosa.
And if you followed it closely, Urban has said these young players are going to play. Don't expect a lot of red shirts. So that means of these 16 or 19 guys that we sign, five or six of them are going to redshirt, 12 of them are going to play. And I would imagine five of those 12 are going to play big roles, Nick Bosa being one, Fuller now being another. And with Harbaugh making the splashes he did, landing the number one recruit, I want to know 2 years from now, who's the guy that we want to decapitate in the big house or at Ohio Stadium, on the last Saturday of the football season.
Exactly. You and I were just talking about during the break. We were talking, you were joking around when talking about sleeping on people's couches, but
there could be some
changes here coming.
There is recruiting. And I guess I read it online. There's I guess Urban Meyer is kind of leading the charge with some type of proposal or proposition to the NCAA that would allow coaches, Urban Meyer and his staff, unlimited text messages to prospects. So instead operating in little pockets of windows that the NCAA delegates to you you can limit the number of official visits, you can limit the number of phone calls. It's always been unlimited mail. So you'd always, for me, I'd get a weekly letter or two from coaches or head coaches, some with a scholarship offer, some with not. But to have unlimited interaction, via social media or via text message that allows you to build that rapport all year long would be big.
All right, let's get to more of that tomorrow.
Sure.
For Dave DiNatale, great job as always.
Thank you, partner,
Matt Wilhelm, we're back at it tomorrow to wrap up the work week.
With an empty building.
Yes, exactly. I'm going to run naked. For Matt Wilhelm, I'm Jason Gibbs. This is Cleveland Browns Daily. The Golden Boys are up next on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You've been listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, a production of the Cleveland Browns and ESPN 850 WKNR.